101.3 FM. This is Fine Music Radio.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I think we've got a slightly nostalgic subject today. One of the books I'm going to talk about is called History of Contemporary Music of South Africa, and it's by Garth Chilvers and Tom Yasovich. And it's quite a fascinating book. Paging through it certainly took me back many, many years. Not that many, but also quite recently. And then they've recently published another book called Reflected on Record, Commentary, Analysis, and Opinion on Aspects of South African Music. And Garth Chilvers is my guest, and he comes from a literary heritage, actually, as his uncle was the renowned author Hedley Chilvers, while Tom Yasovich made his reputation as a music journalist with the newspapers Music Maker and the Rand Daily Mail. He also wrote articles on music for The Star, The Sunday Times, and The Citizen, as well as for the magazine's Top 20, Top 40, E-Vibe, and so on. Now, this 1994 book I mentioned, History of Contemporary Music, covered the history of popular South African music between 1955 and 1992. It proved to be an instant hit with musicians and the South African public, and certainly paging through it takes you back to the days of Springbok Radio and elsewhere. So, Garth, welcome. Welcome to People of Note.
Thank you, Rodney. It's honored, privileged.
All those words are good. You can say them. Garth, I read somewhere, actually quite recently when I was thinking about this interview, that writing a history of contemporary music, popular music in South Africa, is quite a challenge. And yet you and Tom seem to have done it, because this book, History of Contemporary Music, seems to cover just about every name I've ever heard of and many I've not heard of. So the obvious first question is, why did you do it?
Well, I'd always been interested in music. I sort of briefly had a few bands and played as a musician. I had family that were involved in the music industry in the country, and when I met Tom in 1980, we put our heads together, because our first idea was to actually maybe start some kind of sort of newspaper about South African music. But then we decided that it might be better that we try and collate some form of history. Mm. At that time, the New Musical Express and Melody Maker were very, very popular sort of newspapers that were coming from England. And they published the first, what was called the NME Book of Rock, which was a history of British bands. And that
Why did they
set
call
of
it
idea,
NME?
The New Musical Express.
Oh,
NME.
I thought you said NME.
Yeah,
NME. sorry, God.
Yes.
Right.
So that's how it started. The idea was to try and get together a history of as many of the bands from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and current at that point were the 80s, and try and publish a book of some kind.
So this is how this book came into being. But then what strikes me is it must have required a huge amount of research, and also finding the photographs, finding the information, because each artist is meticulously not only credited, but the details of that artist are there.
Yes. It wasn't made easy by the fact that there wasn't that much information available. I mean, we obviously went to all the record companies locally. Tom and I spent about 6 months in the Johannesburg Public Library. I was doing my pharmacy studies at that time, and when I'd finished my daily sort of like things at Wits, I would join Tom and we would go to the basement of the Joburg Library. It was a very, very interesting time.
I'm sure it was. And was there a fair amount of information available?
Yes, there was a lot. A lot of the old newspapers had been kept. It's quite funny because you would have to, in order to get certain parts of the literature, you would have to request them. And then these librarians would come up in their little scooters, and they all had little baskets in front of them that whizzed down There was this huge noise going on, these scooters going backwards and forwards. And
in the library?
In the library itself, because, I mean, it's a huge underground facility.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next thing, all the bits and pieces that you want would be delivered to you there, and you could just carry on.
Including things like photographs?
Photographs, newspapers, books. It was all, it was a lot of it. Certainly, the proceeds of that book is due to the fact that there was a lot of information available.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, it says to 1994.
Yes.
Is that where you decided to stop, or are you going to release another book, or why did you stop in 1994?
That was actually when this book was published. Okay. In 1994.
Right.
We essentially spent about 10 or 12 years in the actual research of this first book.
Well, as long as that, my
yes.
goodness.
Well, the thing is that the history was very, very fractured, and we had to essentially almost start from scratch and rebuild all those discographies and those histories. So it was a huge amount of work involved. I mean, the current book took us 3 years.
Mm-hmm. When you say the current book, you mean the other
reflected
one?
Reflected on record.
Yes,
I had to go back to all my previous research and go and rethink a lot of the previous research. So these things are very laborious. You have to get it right. Mm-hmm. The dates are very important, and the information in it has to be accurate. You know.
Yes, and for many of the people, you also say what they're doing now.
Correct.
So you've brought us up to date with a lot of those people.
Yes.
Like I was interested in looking at the group known as Rabbit, which was such a huge success, which we'll talk about, but looking at what they're doing these days as well. And also pictures shows yes. you that everyone ages.
There we go. Yeah, we're all getting older. But it's nice to be nostalgic about these things and go back and look at the photographs. The reason why the first book was so popular was because people would just phone me up and say, listen, I'm somebody's grandson, and I see there's a book in the library with my dad's name on it. How can I get hold of this book? You know, mm-hmm. So we had a lot of that was happening. I want to give my grandpa a Christmas present. Where can I get this book?
But also, as far as I can tell, it's a book that is used by artists themselves and by producing things as almost an encyclopedia.
That's right. It's the strangest thing. I don't understand it, but this book just doesn't go away.
Really?
It just doesn't go away. It's a legacy book. What can I say?
Well, good. So it should be. And probably the only of its type in this country.
Yes, very much so. It is the only of its type.
Yeah, yeah. So a great reference book, The History of Contemporary Music of South Africa. Then we're going to come to the other one, Reflected on Record. But first of all, I see we've got a very famous piece coming up, Tula Baba. Your first choice is, why have you chosen that?
Yes, growing up as a child, that was probably the first African song that I ever heard. My nanny used to sing it to my sisters and myself when she wanted us to have a bit of a sleep, or we wouldn't go to sleep. She would sing the song, and it was like magic. And it's a song that's always stayed with me, always stayed in my heart. It's such a beautiful lullaby. And I think Louis' version is a particularly strong and great version of this particular song. I love it to bits.
Two.
We're right, Garth. I think that is one of the very well-known South African songs, Tula Baba. And it was the first choice of my guest, whose name is Garth Chilvers, one of the authors of a fascinating book called The History of Contemporary Music in South Africa. And as I said, paging through this is a sort of nostalgia trip, certainly seeing the pictures and so on. But then you and Tom, your co-writer here, came up with another book, Reflected on Record. And what was the, this was 2023, what was the purpose of this book?
That is, I think Tom and I had produced a second book in CD-ROM format in between, which wasn't published as a book. And so that book took a history right up until about 2007.
Okay.
And then Tom and I had a long break, and it was about just a year before COVID, we decided that we were going to pool our resources again into a new book. And we decided with the new book, Reflected on Record, that we were going to really get down to some nitty-gritty with the history and really write some history.
Yeah.
And so the basis of that book is we chose a couple of artists fairly randomly who had meant something to us in our during the time that we were researching music. And we honed in those particular artists, and we've written fairly substantially accurate histories.
Because it is more of a narrative, really, isn't it? As you say,
yes.
More of a history book, whereas
yes.
The other one, The History of Contemporary Music, is, as I said earlier, rather like an encyclopedia.
Correct.
Lots of information and dates and things.
Yes.
Whereas this now explores
yes.
even more. And interesting titles, like that band Suck, which had, I think we can safely say, quite a successful but apparently short career.
Yes, very turbulent, and they were a product of their times. Let's be honest about that. They were in competition with four other bands in the EMI stable, and it's the old story. You put four guys in a combi with no real management, and you don't feed them properly, and you let them loose on the public. Stuff is going to happen.
Good grief.
And stuff did happen.
Oh.
And the band were pretty notorious with the way they had presented their stage act, and it became a problem for the band eventually. And despite the fact that they did manage to record something, which is another debate in itself, they have an interesting history.
And an interesting personnel as well.
And a very interesting personnel as well.
Yeah.
In fact, Steve Gilroy was probably the first interview person that I interviewed when we were doing History of Contemporary Music. We went to meet Steve, and it was a completely chance meeting. We met him in Johannesburg. And when we went to do the new story on Suck, he was very surprised in Johannesburg when Tom and I pitched up at his restaurant.
Right, okay. And then by contrast, few chapters down, the Radio Rats, because apparently they had quite a run.
Yes.
And they did extremely well, didn't they?
Yes. Very popular band in Johannesburg. They were in the forefront of the sort of punk movement at that time, which is the late 70s, early 80s. They were in the right stable. They had Patrick van Blerk managing them, and they managed to record some very, very, very good material. And their big hit, of course, was ZX Dan, which was widely playlisted and very extremely successful for that band. Yeah.
You mentioned the name Patrick van Blerk. You probably know that he does programs for us as well. But, I mean, he must have been particularly interested in all this that you've done, because he was so supportive. For example, that group Rabbit, he was very involved in launching, wasn't he?
Yes. Rabbit was probably one of the most successful bands in the country. It was extremely well marketed, extremely well managed, and they were really, really good musicians on top of it.
And they said, well, I think even I remember they were the first sort of boy band, pretty boys, that caused all the girls to fling their underwear at them and all
yes.
that. And to create mass hysteria.
Very much so. I mean, I saw them live at Coliseum in 72, phenomenal stage act, and the girls were just all over them. They just couldn't get enough of those four guys.
Yeah. And they've gone on. I mean, the famous one, Trevor Rabin, I say the famous one because he was arguably the most famous of them, and he went to Hollywood, didn't he, and is
yes.
still there.
Very much so. Although you shouldn't forget that Duncan Fora himself, who was also in that band, is a also got quite a history. He joined the Bay City Rollers at one point. He's also an awesome songwriter in his own right. But Trevor first went to England, recorded two solo albums in England, and then he went to America, became an independent musician and writer. And his breakthrough came with a song called Owner of a Lonely Heart, which he managed to get recorded by Yes, who in those days were a supergroup.
Yeah.
And that is the thing where Trevor launched an incredible career in the music business in that country.
So the other interesting thing about your book, History of Contemporary Music, is that you don't only cover bands, you cover a lot of solo artists as well, don't
yes.
you? And I see in your new book, you've got a whole chapter on Brenda Fassie, is it?
Very much so. Brenda is a very iconic South African songstress. That article was written by Ken Haycock, as we've indicated in the book. Ken Haycock was then the MD of CCP Records. And I should point out that this is probably the only managing director of any record company anywhere in the world who has ever written about one of their artists. I do not know of any single other instance where someone from a record company has actually published an article of one of their own artists.
My
so it's
goodness.
Actually a first. But yes, Brenda's a very iconic singer, and we don't forget her.
The other chapter that intrigues me here, the anthemic rise of black South African music, which you've covered rather well, but an interesting approach as well.
Yes. For years, people have been saying to me, well, Garth, why aren't you writing anything about black music? And I'd always kind of, in the back of my mind, I don't know what it was, but didn't really feel that it maybe was my time, or whether I had enough information, or whether I was really qualified to write anything about black music per se. But then I went back to my record collection and found some 78s which I'd managed to preserve over the years, and started listening to those again. And out of that listening process, which is about 6 months, I managed to single about eight or ten songs which I thought were worthy of maybe writing something about. I did realize that our anthem was probably one of the earliest recordings that we've ever done in this country, and not a lot has been written about it. There's sort of a brief history which you can get on Wiki or something like that, but nothing that sort of really gets down into how the anthem came about.
The nitty-gritty, as
yes,
you say.
Yes, and Sontonga's yeah. story is an incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe people need to revisit that story.
It is well worth reading in this book. It was one of I've been dipping into the book, Garth, and it was certainly one of the chapters I found extremely interesting. Also the one on Brenda Fassie. But it's time now for another piece of music. And I see you got here Morris Goldberg with Oyoyo, Ojoyo, Spokes. Tell me about this.
Well, Morris, of course, is a pharmacist, believe it or not.
I've got to get to the bottom of this, but we'll do that just now.
Yes,
this pharmacy
so he qualified as a pharmacist, and then he decided to go full-time into music, and he went to the Manhattan School of Music in America, and he's sort of been in South Africa and been in America most of his life after that. That was in the early 70s. He recorded two fantastic jazz albums in South Africa, Morris Goldberg Jazz Quartet, and the Morris Goldberg Urban Jazz Band, which I think people have forgotten about now, but great songs. But then I found on one of my VHSs at home a live recording of Morris with Anton Figg and Sonny Cedras in a band called Ojoyo. And that got me thinking about, well, what else does Morris do apart from play saxophone? And I found that he plays penny whistle. And so I found that song called Spokes, which is a tribute to Spokes Mashiani, who was one of the original founders of Penny Whistle Jive, and his story is in Reflected on Record. Also, it's a wonderful story. Great musician, incredibly played at the Newport Folk Festival in 1965. And this is quite significant because the same night after Spokes had finished his act, Bob Dylan went electric. And that completely threw the entire folk movement into disarray.
That's quite I didn't realize it was as important as that.
Very, very important, because you had two camps. that were divided after that, one into the purists who were only interested in presenting pure folk music, and they had the new protagonists which embraced the electric age.
Wow.
Full bands.
So there's a historical bent to this
very
piece
much
as well from Spokes.
But what I found out the other day, very interesting, the second South African actually performed at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1965, and that was Abdullah Ibrahim. And he played with the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
Wow. Well, we might fit some Abdullah Ibrahim in as well later in the program. But for now, let's listen to Spokes.
Thank you.
Oaks. That was called Morris Goldberg with Ojoyo. Well, we're listening to music selected for us by Garth Chilvers, who's one of the authors of History of Contemporary Music of South Africa, and also more recently Reflected on Record. Both books I have found extremely interesting, but twice now, let's just move away from music for the moment, Garth, because twice you've mentioned pharmacists, and you yourself are a pharmacist. You mentioned studying at Wits and all that. So why, I want to say, why are you a pharmacist? But that seems ridiculous, and not a musician. But I'm interested to know how you're going to answer that.
At boarding school, well, I was at Kearsney College, we had career gardens. Mm-hmm. And a very astute English teacher took me for an interview. All the kids in the Standard 9 class were interviewed about their career paths. And he said to me, Garth, I determined from what I've assessed, you one day are going to be in the medical field, but somehow you're going to be involved in sales of some kind. He said, I can't quite put my finger on it.
That's interesting.
So when I left and went to Wits for the first time in 1975, I was doing a BSc, but I wasn't a happy chappy. And it turned out that later I eventually chose a career path as a pharmacist. And one of the reasons that happened was because when I started listening to a lot of music and got very involved in researching music, I started reading some of the books that were involved with the names of various bands and how they'd come about. And one of the books I read was The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley. And it went into this whole story about various drugs and that. So I started to get a background because I was reading books by Jack Kerouac, and I was reading William Burroughs, and I was reading Ken Kesey's books. So when I started pharmacy, it was quite easy for me. When I got into third year and I started doing pharmacology, it was a breeze because I had all this indirectly. I had taken in all this information.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it all just came out. So I absolutely loved the pharmacy course. Love pharmacology. It became sort of a speciality, I guess you can say. I think what pharmacy does, it gives you, because it's quite specialized and there's a lot of detail involved. You have to know a lot about medication, how it works, side effects, and all sorts of things. I think somehow my brain just wired that way for information. You can take information, collate it, put it together, and make sense of it. So I think that, for myself, has helped. But I must pay tribute to my partner, Tom, at this point in time. He's been a lifelong friend, and essentially he's been the backbone of the research and collating much of the material in both these books. Mm-hmm. He's an incredibly astute observer of music, his incredible knowledge, and musicians in this country really respect him for his opinions on the local music scene. And so between the two of us, it's been a wonderful working relationship. Yeah, so I just find it very easy to find these facts and put it together and find some history.
Your scientific mind, as you said, in a sense.
Something like that.
Which actually explains why this book, History of Contemporary Music, is so detailed, but not detailed in the way that you get bogged down. Detailed in a way that you can find out a lot about an artist by looking at relatively little about them. And so therefore there's speed as well, and clearly very accurate information as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole idea. I think, like you say, these things can tend to get bogged down in too much information. People want something that's readily, easily accessible, gives the salient facts about the artist, who they are, what they've done, essentially the main contribution to the recording industry and their achievements, whether it's been locally or overseas. I think that over the years, these kind of books have fallen by the way. It's become prohibitively expensive to produce them. So it's not easy by any means.
I, you know, just even here while we're chatting, looking at some of the names here, as I said earlier, giving one a sense of nostalgia, but important nostalgia. Sonia Herold, sweet-voiced, brilliant blonde singer born in Nigel. One forgets about how important Sonia Herold was at one stage. She was all over the place. You've got Steve Hofmeyr here, who's around and thoroughly controversial. But then another one, I saw Pierre de Chamois, who I thought, gosh, that takes me back many, many years. and they're all here. I could David Kramer, who's still, as we know, working very, very hard. Who else would you like to pull out of this? Hoochie Coochie's, never heard of them. But anyway, Manfred Mann was another
Manfred
one.
Manfred Mann, well, yes, very interestingly. Manfred Mann graduated from Wits University with a music degree in 1960. A lot of people don't know that. He then went to England. He was a real opponent of the apartheid system. I met him in 1982. He was here on a visit. And Des Lindberg, in fact, very kindly asked Tom and I to come and interview him. He's had an incredible career overseas. I would suggest that possibly as a writer, composer, musician, he probably is the most successful South African musician of all time.
Oh, really? That's saying
if
something.
If you look at his track record of hits and the number of albums that he produced, he probably is the most successful South African musician of all time.
There, you know, big names, Rebecca Malope.
Yes.
Miriam Makeba, Mango Groove. All here.
Yes, Mango Groove. The name was, as I've indicated in our new book, the name was come up by Aaron Jake, Big Voice Jack Leroli, who was in the original Alias and his Zigzag Jive Flutes. Mm-hmm. And they wrote the song called Tom Hark. And he was the original founding member of Mango Groove.
And imagine, I mean, look at that. Julian Laxton is another name that we remember from those days as being a fine musician and very, producing really good stuff.
I was very fortunate. I saw Freedom's Children live in Johannesburg as a young, sort of young adult, you know, 13 or 14. Everyone called him Jules. He used to wear this funny, pointy black hat.
Yes, I remember.
For years and years and years. And Julian, of course, has had an incredible career. He passed away, sadly, last year. We're also very involved with Patrick van Blerk. Many of Patrick van Blerk's recordings features Julian, including the recording of Margaret Singana.
And Makali Workshop?
Makali Workshop, yes, a very original band from Cape Town.
That's right.
Makali Brothers, Mike and Tully, incredible career as a recording engineer, producer in this country, produced Makali Workshop, Falling Mirror, Leslie Ray Darling.
There's another one. Goodness me. Really, I mean, there are names in here that one has actually forgotten about. And yet they played a major part in one's life in the 60s, say.
70s. When it was
70s, when it was being played on Springbok Radio, for example.
Yes.
And the pop stations. Let's have another music break. And I see you've got Margaret Singana here, so I'm glad you've got her in as well. What? Orangutan.
Yes, Orangutan is written by Ramsey Mackay, who was a founding member of the band Freedom's Children, which included, of course, Julian Laxton. I heard that song played by Collins and McBride at Wits University in 1975. At that stage, Ramsey was still playing with Brian Finch and Colin Prattley and Kenny Henson. Unfortunately, the three of them are now deceased. But they leave an incredible legacy of recorded music. Margaret's version of Orangutan features Julian Laxton again on guitar. It's produced by Patrick van Blerk. Once again, it's a fabulous piece of music.
Oh,
That was Margaret Singana, Orangutang, and another choice of my guest here on People of Note this week. His name is Garth Chilvers, and we're talking about a book, a really extraordinary book called The History of Contemporary Music of South Africa. And certainly, Garth, as I was paging through it, I was reminded, as I said earlier, of all these artists one heard on places like Springbok Radio. But I want to find out, you mentioned earlier that you played in a band, and that you looked at your VHS collection, and you even had 78s. So have you been collecting as well over the years?
Yes, since I was about 10.
Oh, really, really?
Yes.
And do you listen a lot at home? And
yes, I have all my original. Well, when I say all my original, I would say I probably got 80% of my original vinyls that I'd collected since I was a young man. Mm-hmm. I had quite a good selection of 78s. Unfortunately, with a move some years back to Cape Town, a few of the really important ones got damaged and broken. So I'm left with a few good 78s still, because the shellac discs now are very brittle, and they easily break easily. But I do have a player, and I'm able to play most of the stuff still.
So is this the sort of music you listen to most of the time?
Yes.
The sort of, what would you call it, contemporary rock?
Contemporary rock, contemporary jazz. I'm a big fan of music from the 60s. I love avant-garde music, and I listen to a lot of South African music, black and white artists from all the eras still. I've got fairly substantial collection of that. Yeah.
So,
and I'm not really a digital person, so I prefer. I'm pretty old school when it comes to that. I still listen to cassettes. Believe it or not, I've still got a fantastic cassette player. I still listen to all my vinyls, very much so. Yeah.
You realize that I now get into trouble with the youngsters here for listening to CDs. I offered to lend people CDs, and they say, well, I don't have a CD player.
Yes.
So now I'm old-fashioned being a CD collector, and imagine you are positively vintage. But great for you that you – and you mentioned VHS as well. You still got VHS.
Still got a VHS player. Well, let's be honest, the vinyl revolution is back.
Well, it is.
There's more vinyl selling worldwide today than there are CDs.
But the thing with the vinyl today is it's hideously expensive. It really is top-class stuff, and you need a really good turntable.
Yes. When we were, say, in our 20s and 30s, vinyl was relatively inexpensive. It was produced in fairly substantial quantities. Mm. So it was about, I guess, economies of scale. I think that, some of the new vinyls that are coming out are incredible. Yeah, they are really, really good quality. They're now on these 180 gram.
That's right.
Discs
that look fantastic,
and
as
they
well.
Play fantastic. Mm-hmm. They do. So, and I mean, Alan Quayle. They've just released an album of Alan Quayle's recordings on vinyl. So that's something that people can look at locally.
Wow, it's all too much, really. And did you say you played an instrument? Did you?
Yes, I play drums, percussion. I've been playing for years.
Okay.
Sort of semi-professionally as a musician.
But then working, as you said, with your partner Tom on a book like this must have been such fun, because your great passion was being put into, well, given a test.
Yes, it's not easy. It's not easy playing gigs and then going to work as a pharmacist the next morning, because people don't want to be faced with a tired, jaded pharmacist in front of them.
Absolutely not.
So I had stopped gigging many years back, not only because I didn't enjoy it, but I'd also developed a medical issue with gigging, and so I was basically forced to. Mm-hmm. I developed quite severe chronic insomnia, which is not a good thing. So I'd stopped gigging as a musician and just sort of played part-time with friends of mine, concentrated on my pharmaceutical career.
But also, having produced something like this is something to be immensely proud of. As I said right at the beginning, I read somewhere that producing a book like this must have been very difficult, but it's so important. But the other thing I like, just talking about this book, you've got in the course of this book a section which reads the best groups, the best live groups, the best songwriters, the best producers, the best radio announcers and DJs, and the finest South African composition, all in the covers of this book, and all sorts of other advice, actually, including books and magazines and newspapers that people can use as a reference, apart from looking through the actual body of the book. So it's quite, as I said before, a kind of encyclopedia of contemporary rock music here in South Africa.
It covers more than just rock music. I mean, if you look at the coverage of Afro jazz and that, we cover all the major black colored artists over that period, including big important bands like Ladysmith Black Mambazo and all the important singers, Makeba, Singana, and people like that. Spurious Rejoice from Cape Town, who are incredible band. Stamelo, who I met, who are absolutely fantastic live band. Yes.
Well, look, why don't we have some Ladysmith Black Mambazo?
Wonderful.
Which is one of your selections here. Homeless. The yes. Famous one, Homeless.
Emaweni we baba.
Silale
Emaweni we baba.
Silale
Emaweni we baba.
Silale Emaweni we baba. Silale Emaweni we baba. Silale Emaweni
we baba.
Silale Emaweni
we baba.
Silale Emaweni
we baba.
Silale Emaweni.
Sing.
Homeless, homeless, moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
And we are
homeless,
we are
homeless, moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
And we are
homeless, homeless, moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake. Homeless,
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 homeless.
Moonlight sleeping on the midnight.
Inhliziyo yami,
inhliziyo
yami,
inhliziyo
yami,
inhliziyo yami.
Vulela makhaza,
vulela
mi,
inhliziyo
yami,
inhliziyo yami.
Sumandla ngulele mi,
inhliziyo
yami,
inhliziyo yami,
imama,
inhliziyo yami, inhliziyo yami.
Tululululu,
tululu.
Strong wind,
strong
wind,
destroy our homes. Many dead tonight it could be.
Strong wind,
strong
wind,
strong wind. Many dead tonight it could be. Homeless,
homeless,
homeless, moonlight sleeping.
We are homeless,
we are
homeless,
we are
homeless,
moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake. Homeless, homeless, moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say. Somebody cry,
why, why?
Somebody sing, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cry,
why, why, why?
Somebody sing,
he tomorrow,
he
tomorrow,
the
sun tomorrow, he tomorrow.
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Somebody sing. Somebody sing.
Hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing. Somebody cry.
Why, why, why?
Kulumani.
Kulumani. Kulumani says,
singenze njani.
Maya, chabula basetanda. Oh, oh.
Well, that's another well-known song, Homeless, by Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And as you gather, we've been listening to local artists because my guest, Garth Chilvers, and his friend Tom Jasiewicz have written this book, History of Contemporary Music of South Africa, followed by Reflected on Record. And as I've been saying, a truly fascinating diary, for want of a better word, of South African artists. And what about the ones, Garth, just before I let you go, who went international? A number of our artists went international, didn't they?
Yes, we've had incredible success overseas. I mean, recently we've got this young lady called Tyler, won a couple of Grammys. She's doing really, really well in the States. But prior to that, we had a success. Probably the most successful business person that came from South Africa is Clive Calder. As a musician, Abdullah Ibrahim,
yes,
been extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
Chris McGregor's Brotherhood of Breath were incredibly popular in Britain in the 60s and 70s. Mongezi Feza was a drummer in that band, and a few others. Great band, great sound, really influential. Trevor Rabin, who we've spoken about. Anton Figg from Cape Town, who is probably drummed with every single major music artist in the United States. Incredibly, someone who we haven't sort of like really thought about is a drummer called Chris Hutton, who was in the Palm Boat Band in Durban in the 70s. He was a graduate of University of Natal, and he went to America and played at the Grand Ole Opry with most of country and western's big artists.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he decided to change paths and became a guitarist and opened for some of the biggest acts in the world for a number of years.
That just shows, just those names you've mentioned, how many people we have put out there that have been born and bred here and trained here.
Well, I think our biggest success as South Africans has been producers.
Mm-hmm.
We produce a number of the most influential producers. Philip Ramon, whose real name is Philip Rabinowitz, from Cape Town, produced Barbra Streisand and Paul Simon, to name two people. Eddie Kramer, who went to England, produced Traffic and Led Zeppelin, and then left England for America with Jimi Hendrix. Incredibly influential producer.
Big names.
Big names.
Yeah.
Mickey Most, who essentially is not really South African, but had his formative training as a musician in South Africa, went overseas. Matt Lange, who had incredible success as a producer in America with Shania Twain and Def Leppard and bands like that. And recently, Kevin Shirley, who is a product of Tully McCulley. He was an engineer that worked with Tully McCulley for a number of years. He's been overseas working with Led Zeppelin, Joe Bonamassa, and people like that.
So we've got a good name as far as producers.
Producers, incredibly, incredible.
Are producers mentioned in this book of yours?
They are.
Oh, right, okay. We're going to have to leave it there because otherwise we're going to run out of time and be thrown out. Garth, I would like you to tell me how people would get hold of these books. Are they on the shelves, or how do you get hold of them?
Yes, you can. Please contact your nearest exclusive bookstore. There is stock in Cape Town, but if you're out of Cape Town and can't get a copy, please ask your local exclusive books to order a copy. Vendor 1091, and also Clark's Bookshop locally have stock as well.
Okay, so they are called History of Contemporary Music of South Africa. That's the big sort of encyclopedia. And then more recently, Reflected on Record, Commentary, Analysis, and Opinion on Aspects of South African Music. I've been talking to Garth Chilvers, and we're going to end on to Garth with Abdullah Ibrahim and one of his well-known hits,
Mannenberg.
Thank you for producing all this, and thank you for enlightening it all for us.
Thank you, Rodney. It's been wonderful.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This is Fine Music Radio.